And I said, Jim, I need you to give me a line of credit because I'm going to be selling this metal and I'm going to be shipping all over the country. You know, women in construction, this is a good thing. And he paused for a very long time. And then he said, I don't really know that I support women in construction. And I was like, what?
What?
I said, of course you do. Of course you do. And I just like blew it off. And he did. He gave me a line of credit. He was the very first company that gave me a line of credit.
Welcome to the Pressure Tested Podcast. Today we are joined by Carmen Autry. Carmen Autry is the president and founder of NTD Mechanical. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited for you to be here too. Kelly Smith has so many great things to say about you. I'm just super excited you're here.
I love her so much.
She is. She's so great. I want to just jump right into, you have such an interesting career progression. It's not super traditional. So I just want to jump right into it. Tell me all about it.
Oh my gosh. It is definitely not traditional. It's also not very impressive. So, it is impressive how far I've come. But honestly, I started at the very bottom. I started as a receptionist for an air conditioning company when I was 17 years old in Florida. Good afternoon, Terry Ebisch, Heating and Air. And I just loved it. I loved the industry, and I did not want to go to college. College was not for me. School was not for me. Anything. And I really love working. I always have, pretty much whatever job some people work to live. I sort of live to work. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got into the industry. And then, I moved to Texas and I bought a sheet metal shop when I was 18 years old. And we put it in my name. So I really did own a sheet metal shop, which is why I call myself the Queen of Sheet Metal. That is my unofficial title. I have a crown that no one can see except me. I really kind of just embraced the industry. I did everything wrong with that little sheet metal shop. It was called the Sheet Metal Shop, and it was a stomp shop. And what we did is we made plenums and transitions and drain pans and things like that for supply houses.
Okay.
So I think we did one duct job way back then, and it was really, really difficult. But I didn't know what I was doing. We didn't have enough money.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying the IRS.
I have to dig into that. What do you mean? Like, you weren't paying payroll taxes?
Our prices weren't high enough, and I didn't know it. So I wasn't, every month I just got further and further in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And because I didn't go to college, I took some clerical classes in high school.
Okay.
And I thought, I got this. Yeah. You know, because I could be an accounts payable clerk or something like that. Like, sure. I knew how to pay the bills.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to figure out if I was making money or not. So honestly, those very early life lessons were just so important because the IRS is always paid now.
That's the paid. First check. Yep, absolutely. Death
yeah,
and taxes.
Yeah, absolutely. I had this shop for about a year and a half, and I sold it to a very, very nice man who is no longer with us, but he could have just waited for me to go out of business and just taken my clients, but he didn't. He was so kind. You know, I think that's one of the things about the construction industry is that you get to interact and meet these people who are just the salt of the earth, and they're just such wonderful folks. Yeah.
I agree with that.
So, after that, it was very hard on me, and I got out of the industry for a couple years, and then I got a job working at United Mechanical, and I say that I grew up there. I absolutely did. I turned their sheet metal shop into a profit center. I'm still friends with them today. I love the guys over there. They taught me so much, and they put up with so
much.
So
how big is that company?
They do about 65, 80 million a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah. And they have a really nice sheet metal shop. And they hired me to fill in the peaks and valleys. And any mechanical contractor out there who has their own shop, they totally know what I'm talking about. Because you get a big job and you're building the ductwork for your shop. And then there's nothing for them to do because your forces are busy installing what you fabricated. So
you started selling the sheet metal you guys fabricated to other contractors?
I did.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. And the owner, the big boss, who is also not with us on this earth anymore, his name is Bob. And he said, little girl, Yeah, because I think I was 22. Little girl, how are you going to do this? How are you going to get them to buy from you when you are a mechanical contractor? And I'm like, well, I mean, this sweet face. But quite honestly, I don't know if it's going to work. It might not work. And so I thought I was so clever. I said, so for 6 months, you can't fire me. You have to you have to pay me no matter what. Okay. Even if I don't sell anything, you have to give me 6 months to try. And it was a smash. I was there for 8 years.
Wow.
I loved all
of
it.
That's so cool.
The only reason I left is because David wouldn't buy me a building. And I got bored. I couldn't push any more metal out of that shop. So
that's wild.
Yeah. And then after that, I went to work for another large mechanical who had a huge sheet metal shop. And they got bought and then got bought again by somebody else. And then 9/11 happened. And the parent company that owned the company that I worked for at the time was called Encompass, and they went bankrupt. And that was 24 years ago. Wow. And my male counterparts who worked at that company with me, who had degrees from A&M in construction management or engineering, you know, they were going out and trying to get jobs at other companies, and they were all getting laid off because 9/11 had a huge impact on the construction industry. And so I thought, well, all right, I can't lay myself off, so I'm just going to start my own company. And that's what I did. I called it Ductworks. It was a DBA in Rockwall County, and I ran it out of my house.
So explain that to me. So you just say, okay, I'm going to start a business.
Yeah.
Like, how did you find the funding? How did you set up the sheet metal shop at your house? Like,
I didn't have any funding. What I did have, though, is I had a group of clients that had been with me for several years, and they had projects that were ongoing nationwide, and that the money had basically already been spent.
Okay.
And so I didn't have a sheet metal shop. I still don't have a sheet metal shop.
Really?
I went to other metal fabricators.
Okay.
And like I went to M&M.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And there was a guy that was in charge of it then. His name is Jim. And I said, Jim, I need you to give me a line of credit because I'm going to be selling this metal and I'm going to be shipping it all over the country. And I said, you know, I'm sure that you want to support me. You've known me for years, and my word is my honor. And I said, and you know, women in construction, this is a good thing. And he paused for a very long time, and then he said, I don't really know that I support women in construction. And I was like, what? I said, of course you do. Of course you do. And I just like blew it off. And he did. He gave me a line of credit. He was the very first company that gave me a line of credit.
So you don't have any. So this is all just on you kind of going in and selling yourself. Because you don't have, you know, the finances to back it up. But you had the relationship and you felt confident to do it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Work has always been really easy for me. Like I said, I love work. It's not hard for me. I mean, there are hard things.
Sure.
But I guess I'm persistent.
That's amazing. That's crazy. Okay, so you're working out of your house. You go to M&M. You get them to basically build your metal for you.
Yes, yes. And then I started selling locally as well. And I worked with some contractors that were smaller that these guys, these skilled tradesmen who are maybe running like a couple guys in a truck, right? Mm-hmm. And they're really good at the technical aspect of their job, but they're not that good at running their company. Kind of like I was. I was losing money. I didn't even realize it. You know, they're driving down the road and they're bidding work on the fly.
Oh, yeah.
So I started working with a guy who was doing a lot of restaurants, and he and I partnered up. He had the license. I basically ran the company, and we did that for a couple of years. And that was how I kind of morphed into being a mechanical contractor instead of just a metal supplier.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. It was pretty cool. It was pretty fun.
And now, something that I just want to hit on, because I just, it blows my mind a little bit. Like, I just think about who I was at 18, and I was just a total waste. Like, I was not doing anything productive with my life. Like, I just dropped out of TCU, and I just can't imagine this world where I would have been brave enough to say, I'm going to go start my own company. Like, how do you believe in yourself that much at that young of an age?
I don't know. I guess it was just like, well, what's the worst that could happen? You know, and it kind of did when I had the sheet metal shop. I mean, that I paid the IRS on my little you know, wages myself for 2.5 years. And it was really, really hard. Yeah. But I don't know. I think maybe entrepreneurs, you just kind of have a little bit of that in you.
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, I came out of the womb and I was 30 years old, I think. Yeah.
That's right. So tell me about your dad. What did your dad do? Aww. What did you grow up around?
Yeah. So I was adopted by my dad. So my siblings and I have the same mom, but my dad adopted me when I was 11.
Okay.
And he was a pipe fitter in the union, and we lived in Wisconsin.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. It was very cool. And I remember he said when I was like 16, 17, because everybody knew I wasn't going to go to college. Yeah, they're like, oh, that's not going to happen. The dumb ones not know. But he was like, you know, hey, kiddo, you could be a welder. And they're hiring females just to meet this quota.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I said, oh, no, I don't think so. You know, because, like, I'm not afraid of hard work.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get up at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And, you know,
amen to
be
that.
In the elements and have all those little sparks flying all over me.
Yeah.
So that wasn't for me. But he was such a good guy. He died way too young. He got cancer. I think he was 54 when he passed away, and it's been a good long while now. But really, really great guy. He and my uncle both worked in the union, and so, you know, I've always just been really comfortable around the skilled trades, the sense of family, and of accomplishment every day is just, I love it.
And that's, you know, it's so funny. Like, I think that when you're raised in Texas, you kind of grow up with this belief that, like, unions are not for Texas, like, that unions aren't beneficial. And I just heard this other story from somebody who has a mechanical contracting business in the Midwest. And she's like, we live and breathe by unions.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, do you have union employees?
I don't. No, we are an open shop.
Yeah.
But I can see both sides.
I see both sides, too, now. And I didn't used to think that.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, she said that whenever they get these great big projects, they just have a whole bench of qualified people to do the work. Yeah. And, you know, we really struggle with that. Like, mm-hmm. finding truly skilled HVAC mm-hmm. technicians and mm-hmm. people that can build sheet metal out in the field or know what these jobs even look like is extremely tough.
Yeah.
Like, how do you guys deal with that?
Yeah. We face the exact same challenges. It's very, very difficult to find experienced people who are still able-bodied and can actually go out and do that very mm-hmm. hard work every day. Because it's difficult. So we have an employee referral program. So because our guys are in the field every day, all day long, and they know who the good people are. So mm-hmm. we reward them financially if they can find someone who would want to come and join our team.
That's good.
Because they don't want bad people working with us.
That's true.
You know, because they have to work with them. But, you know, back to that centralized union idea, I almost wonder if in Texas it's going to be what fixes the plumbing shortage because there are no plumbers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we tried to start a plumbing company. That worked out really badly.
Oh,
We failed. We failed massively at that endeavor. And honestly, because we could not find mm-hmm. the right people to help us run it.
Yeah.
So.
It's the hardest trade right now, I think, in Texas.
I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And the pay, too. I mean, to find a good plumber, because there's so few of them, mm-hmm. their pay is, I mean, it's really high.
It's really high.
And then, you know, you almost can't recoup the extra labor dollars that you're spending, you know, passing it to the customer, because the customer's just going to call up the guy in the truck that they've known forever anyway.
Yeah. Right.
And so it just becomes a very difficult world.
Yes.
And we did residential new construction plumbing.
Mm.
Oh, it was a disaster.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we weren't built for it. We weren't ready for it. We didn't have the team for it.
Yeah.
We won't. That's the one trade that I'm like, I'm gonna stay away from that one. But you have a plumbing service company.
We do. Well, not service.
Okay.
No, it's only construction.
Oh, okay.
And we learned the hard way that our plumbers cannot necessarily do the same jobs that our HVAC department can do.
Mm.
Because HVAC, the harder the better.
Yeah.
Where there's mess, there's money. Like,
wow.
Bring it all day. Those guys are really talented and skilled at those types of projects. And we do a lot of schoolwork.
Okay.
We only do commercial, by the way. We'll do residential, but it's only for our friends.
Yeah, that's
or
fair.
Clients. Like, you know, you get that one-off. But so the plumbing department now is quite small. I think we've only got maybe 6 or something people in that department.
Okay.
And I'm happy if they do 2 or 3 million. You know, it's a great complement to the mechanical side of things to be able to have that in-house to any extent.
Okay, yeah. So tell me more about Entity Mechanical today. So it starts out as a sheet metal shop out of your house. Tell me about the company today.
Yeah, so it's been the last 10 years that it has just completely taken off and transformed. Billy Davis is my VP of operations. Okay. And Billy and I have worked together since, I mean, for 20 years probably.
Wow.
Because when I was doing restaurants with the guy who would bid work driving down the road and he was losing his butt, I needed the best sub crew in town, right? Okay. I didn't have installers that were on my payroll. And so I went back to M&M and I talked to a guy and I said, every sub crew in town comes through this building.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the very best out there? And I need his number. And I'll never forget, he said, oh, he won't work for you. And I said, Lynn, I said, I want you, you need to give me, no, yes, he will. I can be very persuasive. And so he gave me his number and it was Billy. And I called him. Okay. And he's like, I'm way too busy. And I just kept calling. And then we started working together. So then I, you know, okay, so work is easy. Marriage for me has always been hard until now.
That's fair.
Now I have the most wonderful, amazing husband ever. And I'm so grateful every day. But I was going through a divorce.
Okay.
And the stress was like through the roof. And so I basically stopped selling work for myself. I finished up all the jobs that we had. And so Billy and I weren't working together. And he went off and he was doing work for other companies. 5 months later, somebody called me and said, would you like to work with me? Because I want an estimator who can help me get the public work sector kind of like fired up and going. And so I did that. And then I started trying to get Billy back.
Got it. That's
good. So I called him and I called him and I called him and I called him. And then one day he said, Carmen, it's a number. And I said, all right, okay, I can work with this. It's a number. That's great. You didn't tell me no. And he was on the road and he was traveling and he had young family, you know, and he was interested in coming back. And so I said to him, give me the opportunity to teach you the other side of the business because you don't know that yet.
Wow.
And I think that you would really like it. So he was going to come in off the road and basically like talk to me, but I still wasn't sure if he would come and work with me again or not.
Okay.
And at the same time, I was courting Yesenia Garcia, who is my VP of sales and marketing.
Okay.
They both said yes within a week of each other.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I was like, oh, shit. because I didn't have enough money to make payroll both of them.
Okay.
And so I went to one of my mentors and I said, what would you do? And he said, you never let good talent leave. You never do. You'll figure it out.
Hmm.
And so I hired them both.
It's good.
They didn't know that story until they'd already worked for me for like a year and a half because I didn't want to tell them. Like, I didn't want them to get scared. And that was 10 years ago. So you asked NTD today. Mm-hmm. It is because of those two people that I hired. We call ourselves the tripod.
Okay.
Billy calls us the yacht club, and he's the anchor. But those two have just made the biggest difference.
Wow.
You know,
that's
I
so
love
cool.
that. You hire really good, strong, talented people and then let them do it. And they will do amazing things for your company.
So let's talk about that, because I think that that's something that the typical entrepreneur, CEO has a hard time with. You know, they love it so much. They're so passionate about it that they have a hard time letting go of control. So explain that. Like, how do you just hire brilliant people and just completely get out of their way? Like, how do you trust them and just get out of their way?
Well, I call it the three E's. It's educate, empower, and entrust. And you have to do it in that order. If you don't give them the tools and the knowledge to do it, and if you don't have very clear communication about what you expect from them, you've already lost. Then empower them. Let them have power, because you cannot do it all yourself. And if you keep trying to do that, you can't scale. And you're going to lose good people because good people don't want to be micromanaged. And then educate, empower, and trust. So entrusting them is just that second form of validation. You know, it's that's where the sweet spot is between like me and Yesenia and me and Billy. And believe me, when things got really hard a couple years ago, and they did, they got really, really hard. With tears in my eyes, I called both of them to my office on a Sunday. And I said, I don't know if we're going to make it.
Oh, no.
And I mean, this is really, really bad. And I can't believe I got us into this situation, but we are. And it's going to be really hard to get out of. And if okay. you don't want to stay, I understand.
Mm.
Because, you know, and they were like, we love NTD. I mean, this yeah. is our company too. We're not going anywhere. And we are so much stronger today because of it. Everybody wow. stayed.
Wow.
It was amazing.
So if you don't mind me asking, like, what happened?
Oh, I don't mind. You can ask me pretty much anything.
So what happened? What year is this?
So this is 2021.
Okay.
Into 2022.
Okay.
Not that long ago.
Material escalation year.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. COVID.
COVID.
And supply chain.
Okay.
And that ever elusive plumbing division. I went from one plumber to 55 plumbers in 10 months. And we sold $11 million worth of plumbing work in 10 months.
Wow. Okay.
And a lot of it was schools.
Okay.
And remember when I said our plumbers, it's really a different ball game. And I'm not a plumber. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I just really didn't know.
Yeah.
It is an amazing testament to the men that were in that plumbing department. They worked so hard and they really did try. Mm-hmm. They tried to the best of their ability. I couldn't coach them better because I didn't know how to do it.
Right.
So we lost millions.
Really?
Millions.
On one project, multiple projects?
Multiple projects.
Oh, no.
Yep. So I took this sweet face and I went to every general contractor that we had work with and I talked to the highest person in that company and I said, this is what's happening. And okay. I wrote them a 3-page letter as well so they okay. had it in writing. And I said, please do not supplement my manpower because I'm already supplementing it myself. Please give us the opportunity to finish your jobs because that's who we are and that's yeah. how my dad raised me. and we did.
And so GCs are having a problem with your work, like they're saying, hey, we're missing the mark
oh,
or,
yeah.
you know, how do oh, you yeah. explain the loop? Like, look, we've all, like, Moss has been through it. Like, we almost went bankrupt. We've, like, been through it. So this, like, literally comes from zero place of judgment. But, like,
yeah.
how did it get there? Did you just, they get out on site and there's change order work that they don't understand, there's scope that they don't understand, mm-hmm. and because you don't understand it either, you couldn't kind of...
Yeah, it was really, it was, I described it as like trying to hold the reins of 8 horses that are at a full gallop. And there was way too much work too fast.
Yeah.
And we didn't have enough proper supervision. Mm-hmm. The jobs were bad too. And then on top of it, COVID. So
yeah.
the jobs that we sold, several of them were like 18 months and then they ended up being like 36 months.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Running on labor yeah. is pretty much mm-hmm. what always happens.
Yes. And the contracts that we signed were signed prior to COVID.
Okay.
So they were pretty much ironclad. Nobody yeah. knew anything about COVID. There was no way to get out of it.
Yeah. That's tough.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you recover from it?
Well, I had to re-permit those jobs. I called my friends and I said, will you help me, please? Will you re-permit this plumbing job for me? And the plumbers that I have left, I will send them to work under your supervision, under your guidance, your leadership. And I got several companies that helped me do that.
Wow.
I mean, it cost us a ton of money,
oh,
but
yeah.
our reputation remains intact.
That's exactly what you do.
Yeah, it's how you finish.
It is. Yeah. I totally agree with that. It's like wild to hear the story because I mean, it wasn't at the scale that yours was because we did residential new construction plumbing and we finished our contracts, but we decided to part ways with a partner who mm-hmm. was in charge of that. And ultimately everyone, you know, I think everyone involved in the situation is okay with the outcome of that, of how it happened. Mm-hmm. But it was really, you know, we had to call some home builders and be like, hey, like, we can't finish these projects. We aren't the right people to finish mm-hmm. these projects. And it's like, help us, you know, help us figure out how we can help you. And, you know, we even partnered with a local new construction plumbing company. And we were like, hey,
yeah.
Like we got in over our heads. We didn't have the resources for this. And, you know, how can we help you help us finish these? You know, what can we do for you to make this? You know, can we refer all of our plumbing to you? Like, how can we help you? And it, I think at the end of the day, it's like how you treat people and how you treat the people that work around you in these homes and these on these projects. It's valuable because one day you might pick up the phone and need them.
Absolutely. You know, this is a it's a big community, but we're also tightly held together.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of the work that we do, and it's just as important, a residential market. I mean, that's someone's home.
That's somebody's home. That's right.
Yeah. It's a very big deal. But in the end, we don't ever want our owners and our clients, you know, to suffer. It's not about the money. It's about doing the very best job that we can do for what they bought, for the client, and finishing on time. And, you know, we've never missed a deadline, knock on wood. This is wood, right? Knock on that.
Close enough.
We haven't missed a deadline. All of our schools always open. During COVID, you know, another thing that we had to do is we couldn't get the equipment. And so we bought equipment ourselves and put it on buildings just so that the kids could go to school.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do you just put them as fixed assets? Now you have the equipment yourself to have on your books?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you get past this and you say, okay, I figured out exactly what it is that I need to do.
Yeah.
And then the company keeps going and you guys have continued to grow and you're very successful now. So how did you recover from all of it? You just kept going?
It was a lot of sleepless nights.
I bet.
It really was. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. I'm so grateful that my husband doesn't work in this industry. And I would try really hard to not bring it home. But I mean, there was a lot of days. There was a lot of crying. Lots and lots of crying.
Man.
No crying in construction, my ass. There's lots of crying.
Yeah, there's lots of tears involved. I agree with that. I mean, you know, I think that a lot of people have never had the experience of what it feels like to almost lose a business.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's everything.
Yeah. And well, and there's a difference. You know, if something happens and you go out and find a new job, that's being an employee.
That's right.
If something goes wrong and you have to mortgage your home, that's different. You know, that's a pretty big weight. And until this happened, I had never experienced anything quite that bad.
So something that's always interesting to me is the different CEOs that I meet, the different owners of businesses. Their day-to-days all look completely different. Like, you might have the CEO, and he's in the numbers. Like, he might as well be a CFO.
Yeah.
And then you have the CEOs, it's like, no, I'm just out here doing business development. Right. I don't really know what goes on over there.
Yeah.
So tell me what your day-to-day looks like as a CEO.
Yeah, thank you. That's a fun question. I will answer it by saying that my husband and I, we were on, like, a mini vacation a couple years ago. And, it you know, pretty much the 911 emergency stuff was past us. But I'm on the phone and he can hear one side of the conversation. And when I hung up, he said, my God, he said, you have no idea any given day what your day is going to entail and like what's going to come at you. He said, it's freaky. So my sweet spot is estimating and sales. I really do love the estimating. And I mean, that's what they pay me to do, I guess. But the thing that feeds my soul is employee development.
I love that
so much. I love helping employees, giving them the tools, the time, the energy, the safe space to become self-aware and to think about their career and how they put themselves in any relationship. You know, construction can be very combative. It can be the world of difficult conversations because what we do isn't easy. Having project managers that are, or superintendents that are getting screamed at by someone who is not self-aware and helping them through that is, I love that.
So how active of a role do you, so tell me how many people work there?
We're just under 100.
Okay, that's big. That's huge. So how do you get to hire everyone that comes through the door, like, that maybe works in the office?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And for the most part.
That's good.
Yeah.
And you've just been able to kind of develop relationships with them. You know, like, I feel like there's, you know, somebody somewhere wrote a book about something, you know, that I can reference. It's like, oh, you know, you have to keep up boundaries. You can't be best friends with everybody. Yeah. But like, tell me, like, how do you kind of, when you hire somebody, like if you see that they're talented, like, do you just fully go in and be like, hey, I'm going to be your mentor. I'm going to be the person that guides you through this. Or do you kind of step back and let other managers do that? What's your approach there?
Oh, wow. That's a very thought provoking question. So it depends on, I definitely step back. I have to step back. And there have been people that we have hired that work in the office that I met after we hired them. Like, which, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Again, I want to empower and entrust my managers to make those decisions and to fill the spots on their teams. Our office team is still pretty small. We've got, I think, 22 people that work in the office.
Okay.
So the, you know, the key positions, the, if you're going to touch the money or manage people, then yeah, I'm going to be involved in hiring you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And if you're in estimating, even stuff like that, it's any, and those roles are pretty critical to the overall, you know, health and well-being. It's a tricky thing, and it's actually bit me in the past. I had someone that I care very much for. I really adored his loyalty and his skill set. And I tried to mentor and help him. He was really very down on himself all the time. And so it wasn't going great with me. So I hired him a coach. And, you know, I was like, you use this one-on-one time. This coach will not tell me anything about what you talk about. You know, I just want you to hopefully get past where you're at with this. And he ended up leaving. He quit. And I think he still harbors, I don't know, bad feelings. I don't know why. So sometimes, yeah, you have to go, okay, well, I did the best I could. I tried. Yeah. And you know, it's, sorry.
Yeah, I think, you know, I agree that construction is hard and skilled trades is hard and HVAC is hard and all that stuff is hard. But I think the hardest part is the, and, you know, I think everybody's different. I think you're great with people. I can just see that you naturally care about people. I get the, it's like, but peopling is hard for me. And so, like, the management of people is extremely difficult. You know, you never know if you put in enough or you didn't put in too much. Like, or then when you have to have difficult conversations, you know, and you're like, well, what did I do prior to that difficult conversation to kind of get them to where they're at today?
Right.
And it's, there's a lot of self-reflection involved in managing people, and it's tough.
Yes. Yes.
So you're all into estimating. So tell me kind of, like, do you see every job that goes out? Like, you see the, you see the bid number? No. So, okay, tell me a little bit more about, like, revenue size. So how, what kind of revenue did you guys do in 24?
We did right at 30 million.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
And you're doing mostly school. So, okay, pretend I know absolutely nothing about HVAC, and I don't know that much. So, tell me about what a project scope might look like for you for, like, a school remodel or something.
Okay. We do a lot of public work, and a lot of these public work buildings are pretty old. Okay. So they might have, like, they might have a hydronic system with, you know, chillers and cooling towers and air handling units and all the piping and all the pumps and the things and the controls and blah, blah, blah. and they might replace portions of that system, because, as you can imagine, for some of these schools, I mean, they're massive.
Yeah.
They're huge. And the renovation budgets are fixed. You know, this is taxpayer money.
Right.
So it's not like you've got Elon Musk. Hi, Elon.
Yeah.
out there flinging, you know, billions around.
Yeah.
It's always controls. It's always, you know, some sort of duct modification. We love VRV, VRF.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Love it. And we have been involved in some projects with that where it's like a geothermal replacement, because some of the people, we didn't know this 20 years ago, but geo is not necessarily great for this particular area of North Texas.
Okay.
It's got a shelf life. And unfortunately, when it fails, it's very expensive.
Because you have to replace the well field?
Or cap it and go another way.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, I, so one of the things we did, we, Garrett, me, and my husband, we all worked for Crawford Services prior to coming here. Mm-hmm. And so they were putting geothermal systems into really big homes. And so but I was part of the service department. So I saw all the times that those geothermal equipment would fail. And I knew that it was always so difficult to work on it. Mm-hmm. But it always kind of felt like to me it was just new technology and new new technology that we didn't know enough about yet. Okay, so tell me, like, if you were to look back at, you know, Entity the last 5 years, like, what project do you just point back to and you're like, that's what we do and that's what we kill it at?
So maybe in the last 5 years it would, well, can I have two?
I'll let you.
All right, it's cool. So we did a huge school, a new construction school, which we don't normally do. Normally it's remodels for us, and it was a VRV project. And it was LG, and I'm so incredibly proud of our install team because they're amazing. And the LG folks were walking the job, and they said, not only is this a great install, it's the best install we've ever seen.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That is cool. That's super cool, because that's complex stuff. Like, that's not your everyday condensing unit out back with some flex duct. That's tough stuff.
Yeah. I remember the first time that I bid one of those, I bid it as if it was a split system. I didn't know what I was doing.
Oh, no.
Thank God we didn't get the job. And then my other project that I would pick, we're finishing it now. It's called Dream Center, and it's a renovation of a historical building.
Ooh.
It's two stories. The roof is round. It's out. It's down by the zoo in Dallas.
Okay.
And it's they're bringing it back as a church and a community center.
Oh, cool.
And that's so fun to, you know, be part of the revitalization of an area.
What kind of systems are in that?
VRV.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, again,
yeah, that's cool.
And it's because the building is so challenging. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's so cool that you get to do that kind of work.
I love VRV. If I were to build a house, that's what I would use for myself, for sure. Yeah.
Wow. You know, we actually did like a variable refrigerant flow project here. Like, our gym is set on that. But no one can ever figure out how to work the heads. Like, the. So I don't know. I'm not going to tell you that that's exactly what we do just yet. We are really good at residential new construction. Like, I think that that's important for a business.
Yeah.
Like, figure out what it is that you do. Mm-hmm. And then kind of stick to it.
Yes.
You know, like, we will take on things for friends, and then sometimes we're like, okay, we're in a little bit over our head on this, you know, like, but I think being a responsible business person is knowing what's your lane.
Yeah.
You know, and being really good at that lane.
Yeah. Ever since the plumbing department, I'm much better at reeling things back and saying, no, we're not going to do that. And I'll kill a project at contract negotiation if I need to. Yeah. Okay. And I want to encourage everyone in construction to negotiate your contracts, please.
Okay, let's talk about that. So I had Tanya Johansson on the podcast. She's a construction lawyer, and she just went to work on, you know, so she was general counsel at Beck, and she was like, you need to be redlining your contracts. You need to be asking for this. So tell me, what are you redlining? Are you redlining scope? Are you redlining legal language?
All of it.
Retainage? Do you get held retainage?
Yes, we do. Yes, 5% typically on public works projects in Texas.
Okay.
And then anything private is 10. And, you know, the GCs are negotiating retainage.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting it on a job that's 2.5 years old. And as the things are being completed, I'm sure that they're getting a retainage reduction.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a GC that we work for still today. And the job, it was during COVID, and it had been going on and on and on. And so we asked for a reduction in retainage. And she said, okay. I mean, that was it. Like, literally just asked. And it was okay.
Mm.
And she released... I know what it was. On that one, they withheld 10 because some of them are like, we do what we want to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. And she released 5, and, and then we had the standard 5 one. But I negotiate everything.
Everything? So you're reading the contracts. This is like your part of the business.
I do. Yeah, I do that
too. That's good.
But I use a legal, I have a lawyer.
Yeah.
That, and she and I have worked together forever. And so she kind of knows what Carmen will put up with and what's important to us.
That's great.
And, you know, if you've got your hot list of 10 and you stick to your guns and you do good quality work, then you'll probably get it. Most of the time we get it. We get what we ask for.
Do you ask to see, somebody brought this up to us the other day, that we needed to be asking for the GC's contract with the developer?
100%.
Because a lot of, you know, they said crazy things like, oh, they might not even be, you know, retainage may not even be held on them.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've heard that before, but I didn't know it was a thing. So you do that. And absolutely. You advocate for that.
100%. Hmm. Yes. Wow. And it's because if the shit ever hit the fan and you really did have to litigate, you have to have that as part yes. of your, and your contract says that you've seen it.
It does. Yeah. Because you agree to a lot of terms in your contract.
Absolutely.
About it.
Absolutely. The flow down language. That's okay. right.
Okay. I'm gonna push Garrett on that. Good. That's Garrett.
Good. I love it. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's very healthy for a company to, you know, get into politics to some degree, understand the laws in the state of Texas.
Okay.
So that you know how to play the game.
That's really great you just said that. So one of the things I read about you is that you were the president of ASA. Are you yes. still the president of ASA?
Gosh, no. I was in it for a long time. Sorry. No. And I loved it. And it's full of great people. Mm-hmm. ASA North Texas, I served on the board for, I think, about 8 years.
Okay.
And was the president, yes. And they were so kind and patient with me because, unfortunately, it's when the shit was hitting the fan for my company.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was thinking.
I'm like, oh, no. So I did the best I could. You know, it's really a neat organization because it does focus so much on construction law, being a lobbyist arm mm-hmm. for construction,
okay,
and educating its members in what you need to be aware of and yeah. be paying attention to.
We're members, but we've never done much with it. We
oh,
should,
yeah,
but
you totally should.
What other organizations are you in?
So we're in RHCA, which is the Regional Hispanic Contractors Association, mm-hmm. and Yesenia Garcia just won the Pillar Award for Executive of the Year.
That's amazing.
It is. I mean, I was moved to tears. I'm like, I said at the luncheon, I said, why am I the only one crying? and I don't really cry all that often. I make it sound like I cry all the time. I don't, not really. But there were like 15 nominees, and she won. And it was just so gratifying to see her up there on that big stage and, you know, making her speech. I mean, there were 800 people in the room.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's so cool.
So what does she do for the business? Yeah, I know sales and marketing.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
What does that mean?
VP of sales and marketing. That means that she has a company credit card and she uses it however she wants.
I love that. That's fun.
Yeah. She learned how to play golf. And
oh,
so,
that's cool.
Yeah, she takes clients to play golf. Wow. She just spent 3 days in Austin with the sales team. They were at the TASBO convention. It was one of the school conventions. And, you know, whatever, lunch and learns, happy hours.
That's great.
She is absolutely the face of NTD. And she knows every project that we have. She reviews every bid that goes out except for mine. And everybody in the sales and marketing department reports to her. She's also the brainchild behind our social media and website design
wow.
and content. We like Kelly Smith. We use Bold Entity, and they're amazing.
Okay.
But it was Yesenia pushing that we that we needed a presence. So I love that you're doing this podcast and that you have this super cool studio. It's so beautiful. Sunny is going to be jealous.
Yeah, this that podcast, it really started out as Garrett was like, hey, I'm going to start a podcast. And he was going to start it with these like other guys. And I was like, I was so offended. I wasn't invited to this like bro podcast.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm offended by something, I'm just going to fight about it. So, yeah. You know, to fight back, I was like, well, I think I should get to take over the podcast once a week and talk to women in construction. He was like, hey, what a cool idea. And I was like, okay. And so I just like kind of went for it and like started reaching out to all these women and got all these podcasts scheduled. And then at some point, Garrett was like, I don't really know where we're going with the podcast. I don't really know if I'm going to do it anymore. And I was like, but I have all of these interviews. And I was like, and I have, you know, this whole vision for this thing. And he's like, okay, well, you know, keep doing it. It's fine, whatever. And I was like, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, one thing that we really wanted to do with Moss Heating and Cooling is, you know, we just have this idea that decisions have stopped being made by just the man in the house. Like, no longer do women just sit idly by and, like, let the guy call the man out to make the decision on replacing the heating and air conditioning.
Right.
Like, you know, like, my husband's in heating and air conditioning, but if we have projects around the house, like, I'm the person calling people. I'm the person looking at quotes. Like, I'm going to get it done. And I started thinking of all of my friends and all the people that I know, and I was like, all of the women that I know make these decisions.
Yeah.
And I was like, why aren't we marketing towards women? And we had this marketing firm that came in and they were like, yeah, market to women. And we were like, okay, how do we do that? And so we like changed some of our graphics. We thought, hey, what a better way to appeal to women than to have a podcast about women leaders? And like, how does that kind of get our name out? And so it was just kind of a whole host of things that got us here. But it's, I want to talk to smart women who've done really cool things. And it's funny because I said that to somebody one time. She's like, okay, so you're just trying to make friends. I was like, Maybe I'm just trying to make friends. I don't know.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
So, where do you find time to get involved in all of the organizations? Like, I have a hard time with that. How do you do that?
I think it's vital. I think you have to really push yourself. And I get it. It is so much easier to just sit at your desk and do your work.
Amen.
It is so much easier, and I think everybody sort of feels that way to an extent. Every time, though, that I push my chair back and stand up and leave my desk and leave my office and go out to a luncheon or whatever, an association event, I am so grateful that I did. Every single time.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And you just have to force yourself to do it. We just joined Texo, and I'm so excited about Texo.
We love Texo. So my very first podcast guest was Melanie Rainey.
I know, I saw it.
She is so cool. Like, yeah, I want to be here so when cool. I grow up. Again, it's just me reaching out to people that I want to be friends with. But she's just so cool. And, you know, she's somebody that's recommended a bunch of people to the podcast. Mm-hmm. But just, like, kind of the epitome of just a strong woman in construction.
For real.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And before her, honestly, no offense, but we had a bunch of crusty old white men. That's what we had. And now we have her, and she's super cool, and she's pretty, and she's so smart, and she works the room, and she knows everybody, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I know.
You know, the other thing I always just try to do is, I just don't think a lot of women know that construction is an option to them. And, you know, even women post-college, like I think that there's such a need for women to be project managers, to work in the finance teams, like God knows we need women HR because men could not do that job. like, we need more women in construction. Like, what? How do you advocate to get more women in construction?
Oh, my gosh. It's a dream of mine. And I haven't done it yet, but it is a dream. And maybe I'll get to be able to actually see it come true someday. And my hat is off to the bigger companies out there, like the Balfour Beatty's, who do get this done, who give opportunities to women to be able to even work in the field. That is so super cool. This is my dream, okay, that NTD has a woman team led by women, and that they go out and they can work in the field, and that we have a child care assistance program, maybe even a transportation assistance program, because some of these single moms, I mean, they need the ability to make this great money, but it comes at such a cost unless they have this amazing network of support to help them raise their children. You know, the job, most construction sites start at 7 a.m. and it's off at like 3:30. So if your kids aren't already in school, that's like you can't do it.
Yeah.
But the money that they can make would allow them to be less dependent on perhaps a bad relationship or bad choices, things that aren't serving them as well. So I would love to do it. And the companies that have done it, thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
How do you, and I'm just like thinking through this, but like, how do you figure out 10 other companies that are your size that also want to do it, that somehow want to get more women in construction or get more women into the skilled trades, and you all partner together and somehow do it?
I love that idea. That is a great idea.
Okay, we're going to figure that out.
Okay, we'll I know Kelly out. Smith will be in.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, I think Kelly, we have actually talked about it before. She's such a little powerhouse.
Do you know Julie Strong?
Who's she with?
So she owns her own company and runs it, and she's a big Texo person. She's going to be in on this conversation too.
All right.
Like,
I love it.
She's in it. Like, this could be a whole thing. Okay, we're going to do it.
Okay.
One of my last questions to you. So, you know, we've talked about it. You didn't do the 4-year college.
Right.
To people who didn't do 4-year colleges or didn't necessarily do it when they were younger, there's always that kind of like awkward moment where everybody's talking about where you went to school, and you can almost feel them. So my husband didn't go to college, but you can almost feel them immediately discount you as soon as you're like, oh yeah, I didn't go to college. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's changing. Like, mm-hmm. let's say that you're sitting in a room with an 18-year-old kid, male, female, doesn't matter, and they're trying to make this, like, ultimate choice. Like, mm-hmm. what is your advice to them?
Oh, my gosh. So I think for the last 25, 30 years, there has been this really crazy strong push to get kids to go to the traditional four-year school.
Yeah.
And Mike Rowe for president, okay, nothing against Trump, but Mike Rowe for president, because that guy has done more for skilled trades development than I think anybody. Do you know who he is?
No, Dirty I Jobs. Don't.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't.
And he's kind of a hottie. Just
saying. Okay, I'm going to look this guy up.
He has a great podcast presence, and he's always talking to people about the skilled trades. Okay. And his TV show is called Dirty Jobs. It's absolutely true. You do not have to have a four-year degree. If you want to, that's fine, you know, but it isn't required in construction. Do I have time to tell you a super fun story?
Yeah, tell me.
Okay, so my husband and I used to go to the movies a lot, and we went to Look in Addison, mm-hmm. and this is before COVID when it was open. It's not there anymore. But Look Theater had a dining room and a bar, a restaurant attached to it. And we would always go in and we'd have a drink before the movie. And then we'd come back out after and we'd have another drink at the bar. And this one day, there's this different bartender there. And she was so amazing. And I'm watching her. And I said to my husband, I said, look at her, check her out. I'm like, she works so well under pressure. She is kind. She's considerate. She's getting it done. A lot of her coworkers were basically screwing off, and she wasn't mean to them. She just like jumped in and she was helping everybody. And I said, she would kill it in construction. She'd be so good, so good. So we go and we see the movie, we come back out. And I said, this is going to sound crazy. I said, I'm sure you have like, you know, a daytime job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big girl job. I said, but have you ever considered a career in construction? And she goes, what? No. Like, why would I? No. What? No. And I think when people think about construction, they think only skilled trades necessarily, like working in mm-hmm. the field, like yep. digging. And that is all very valuable work. We have to have that. But I said, I think that you would make an amazing project manager. And it took me about 4 months to get her hired, but I did. I hired her. And she loves Crane Day or Helicopter Day more than anybody on the planet. She has absolutely embraced construction. She loves mechanical work. She's such a rock star, a superstar. Her jobs are so good. Another company hired her away from me, and she went and worked there for a couple of years, and I got her back. And I'm never letting her go, never. And she's just so amazing. So there's all this talent out there, and they just don't necessarily understand how good of a career construction can be, you know?
You know, it's funny because I've seen so many people, you know, like people working at a restaurant or people that, you know, working anywhere where I'm like, this person would be great.
Yeah.
But I don't always have the courage to be like, hey, you know, maybe you should think about construction. Oh. Like, but I'm going to change that. Like, I'm going to be, next time I see a rock star, I'm going to be like, you should think about doing this or think about doing that. I did say that to somebody at Lowe's one time because she was like this young girl and they were like loading stuff up in our truck or helping us load stuff up. Like maybe we bought patio furniture or something. I don't even know. But she was just working circles around those guys.
Yeah.
And I was like, great. Give her your business card. Like, we are going to hire this girl. Yeah. She never called us, which was really disappointing. But she did. I mean, sometimes you see these women that are just absolute rock stars that, you know, could work circles around most men. Mm-hmm. Okay. You've given so many good, in the podcast world, we call them, Dave taught me this term, but we call them snacks of like little like kernels of knowledge that you've put out there. But if you had to go back to like a single thing that somebody's given you in terms of business advice, what do you think was the most important thing you've ever heard that just kind of like set you on a different trajectory?
Mistakes are going to happen. Mm. People are fallible. People are people. and they're going to make mistakes and they're going to cost you money. Mm. And that is just the cost of doing business. But when you can coach that person or yourself through what did I learn in that, that's where the gold is, you know, because as long as they can see it for what it was and then not, they just learn from that experience. And it sounds so simple to say it. When I worked at United Mechanical, I bid a huge movie theater job. So in movie theaters, again with the movies, there's a lot of duct work.
Okay.
And I didn't read all the specs.
Oh no.
Because they're boring. And so I missed this one thing in the written spec, and it was that for the turning vanes in the elbows, you had to use these tiny little brass tacks.
Okay.
Literally brass
tacks.
And so the engineer caught it in my submittals.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, nope, rejected. You have to buy this. And it was sole sourced as well. They had to come out of like Ohio or something.
Oh, man.
And if turning vane was 38 cents a foot, this stuff was $7.50 a foot.
Oh, no.
And I went to my and I said, oh, my God. So the very first thing, and I ask my people this all the time, when you have a problem, try to figure it out.
Mm.
What's the disparity? How much are we talking about?
Yeah.
Are we talking about $5?
Yes.
Or $50,000?
Mm-hmm.
Because my reaction is going to be very different.
Yeah.
And his, I mean, this was a big number. It was a big number. And I'll never forget. He looked at me and he said, what did you learn? And I'm like,
wow.
I learned I can't take for granted that I just know what's in the specs.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. But what a great personality to say back to you, what did you learn, instead of what the hell did you do?
Yes.
Hmm. Yeah. That's good. That's a good learning moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, and specs are super important.
Yeah, they are. They sure are, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carmen, thanks so much for coming on the podcast with me today. You. I had such a great time.
Yeah, thank you. I did too. Thanks for inviting me. And this is really great. It's wonderful. And I thank you for doing it. Thanks for caring enough about the industry to actually put this together and to do it.